Okay, guys, let's continue. And Akira's never met Tara. Okay. So again, so Mati asked me, he's like, what happened? You know, we started with doing PSOC, and then you seem to be doing, you know, random topics. I'm like, no, I'm not doing random topics, right? If you just remind us where we are in terms of our course of the year, the reason, right, which we did two weeks ago, they point out is one of the most important areas in halacha, because it really is important to recognize that halacha has built into it this notion that under extenuating circumstances, it is legitimate to not approach the sugya, how shall I say it? I don't know. What's the word I'm looking for? Like in a sterile, like to approach the, that sometimes it's not worth approaching halacha sterile, right? Sterily, right? Neutralized of all, it's fine, sleep.
Yeah.
Right, that it's not always true that you have to approach halacha, right, sterilely, right, as if it was neutral, right, as if we've purged it of all biases, right? The notion of a psikat halacha b'sharat chak, that under extenuating circumstances is legitimate to push, right, to try to get to a certain answer. Again, that doesn't mean you're always going to get to it, but try to get to a certain answer, right, indicates that halacha isn't what a lot of people think it is. Right, the fact that that's legitimate, which it undeniably is, right? I mean, undeniably has a place in halacha, right? There's no question about that. I know it still bothers a few of you, right? But it undeniably has a place in halacha, right? That is just something that exists in halacha. We try to explain why that might be, right? Whether it's dependent on multiple truths or not, or whether it's just the fact that risk-taking, especially for values that are recognized as valuable within the halachic system itself, right? However exactly you want to formulate it, right, the fact is that there is room for I don't want to say bending, right? It's for reaching for a specific conclusion which is less plausible than the alternative, right? That doesn't mean much less plausible. It depends on the circumstance, and when that's true and why that's true, right, is obviously a very important of halacha. Now, I don't think I made this clear enough a few weeks ago, but let me rephrase it. Part of the reason I think the psikat halacha b'sharat chak appears so much in psak is not per se that more often than not halacha is decided b'sharat chak, but I think a disproportionate percentage of questions that are asked because there are extenuating circumstances.
Right?
Meaning, if you think about your own life, right?
Asking about lights, it's going to be pretty...
What?
Yeah,
I mean, I just mean that, like, in your average religious life, right, 90% of what you do, you don't even have to ask a question anymore. Of the 10% of things you need to bother asking questions for, right, some of them you're asking questions because it's a new situation, I just don't know the answer. And sometimes you're asking because I sort of need an, right, I sort of, the normal, what I think is the halacha, or should be the halacha, is really, really hard right now for whatever reason, and therefore I'm going to ask the rabbi to see if there's room to offer a different answer. Right? That doesn't mean that most of halacha is practiced in the situation of shasat chak. It just means that a disproportionate number of things that make it to poskim, especially major poskim, right? Meaning shailas that, right? You think about it, right? If you read the tshuva literature, you're not just reading the questions that people ask the rabbi. You're usually asking the questions that are important enough that the regular shul rabbi forwarded it on to the Gadol HaDor because he didn't know the answer to wasn't willing to make a final decision on. Right? Again, of those shailas, they're basically going to be divided into complicated shailas that aren't covered by normal life or painful shailas that require a sensitive posek to explore whether halacha has room to be makil. And that doesn't mean... In Achrami, the majority of our life is not lived in that, and you know, I've said this. You know, someone once asked me about a certain non-Orthodox scholar who writes halachic positions, which are quite show significant erudition, right? Meaning they're not stam, right? The person clearly knows Torah. And he asked, "What is my problem with him?" Because I really do have a problem with him. And I said, my problem is, and this is very subtle, and I don't know if I could explain it to the average person, right? But hopefully we've done enough background that I can explain it to you. I said, it's not that everything he writes, I don't think, is possible. It's that kim'at, whenever I read anything he's written in halacha, I know the answer he's going to give, because he treats every area of halacha as if it were shas hadchak, and therefore a limud zchus answer is legitimate as his lichatchila answer always. Right? And I said, even though that sounds like semantics, right? Because even I'll agree that sometimes you can do that. It's not. And let me try to clarify it. The nature of psikat halacha b'shas hadchak is that it's in the minority of cases. Right? That's its nature. Right? The nature of relying on shas hadchak or a limud zchus is that it's not always, or not the majority of the time. Right? Once it starts being all the time, or the majority of the time, then you're not living a lifestyle which is meshubat the halacha, right? Because you're saying, almost every time I have a halachic issue, I'm going to, right, stretch the bounds of plausibility to get the answer that I want.
Right?
If shas hadchak or limud zchus becomes a lifestyle, right, and you're always trying to, you know, draw the target, right, after you've already shot the arrow, so then you're serving yourself, not God. Right, what makes, maybe I didn't clarify this enough, but now let me put it this way. What makes psikat halacha b'shas hadchak a legitimate mechanism is that it's employed by people who are under most circumstances willing to accept halacha even if it's mildly hard. And they're asking a shaila because they don't expect to get an automatic yes. They just recognize that halacha has a certain level of flexibility built into it, and that under some circumstances it's legitimate to rely on less plausible positions, right? And that's not a break from Dvar Hashem, right? But the key to shas hadchak and its legitimacy and limud zchus and the like is that it is a minority of cases, right? Again, when you read Shuva literature, I think a disproportionate number of shailas seem to function on this level, but that's not, again, because most halacha functions this way. It's because most of the time when people bother asking, it's because, right, they're asking because there's a complexity, either simply an intellectual complexity, right, electricity, what the heck is this thing, right, or a pressing need that requires them to figure out, you know, is there room, okay? So I know it bothers you. Right? And it should bother you, the notion that halacha isn't sterile. Right? It should at some level bother you. But on the other hand, that discomfort, I want you to realize, right? I want you to eventually come to terms with it. Right? And come to terms with the fact that, again, it's not a lifestyle. Right? We shouldn't live limud zchus. We shouldn't live with less plausible reads. Right? We should be willing to swallow a level of... Look, I'll tell a story that maybe will capture this. There was Rav Amital liked to talk about this, and the Rav also liked to talk about this a lot, right? The notion of sacrificing for God, right? That part of halacha is sacrificing for God, right? And there was the same non-Orthodox thinker, right, whose father used to be the head of JTS. Said he asked his father once, and he said, "You know, he said this what?"
I don't know
who it is. It's Ethan. It's Ethan Tucker, and his father is Gordon Tucker. Okay.
I figured I said father.
What?
I figured I said father.
Fine.
Yes. Like a
fine.
Joke. Everyone knows who it
fine.
Is.
Fine. No. Okay. I'm just saying. Whatever. I once heard it in some. I heard a story from him that he said he went to his father and he said, you know, because the Rav would talk about this. The Rav and Rav Amital used to talk about this in big things. Like Rav Amital would like talk about this with someone who was engaged to a divorcee and then found out he was a Kohen.
Whoa.
Right? Things like that. Right? Like hard challenges. Or a woman who is married to a Kohen and gets raped and has to divorce her husband. Right? Like, right, serious things. Right? They talked about the notion that, look, in the end of the day, not all of halacha is going to be easy. There are things where your mamash have to sacrifice for God, right? That's what it is. And he said, where is that in our culture? Because it wasn't really the you know, the JTS culture. And his father said, it's true. They see sacrifice in the big things, and we see sacrifice in the Jew who gets up to daven, right? And it's hard to give up that little bit of sleep, right? Or something like that. I think it's that, and maybe, you know, spends extra money on kashrus or something, right? I'm not saying there's nothing to that, right? But I think that in order for Shas HaDchak to be legitimate, it can only function in a community that recognizes that there are going to be legitimately hard situations where you're going to have to sacrifice for God. Right? Once you're willing to accept that the rule is God can demand this from me, then it's religiously legitimate to turn around and say, but he doesn't always do it. He doesn't always demand that I go to the most stringent one, that I don't look for kula, that I don't try to make life livable. Some he can demand it from me if he wants to, and sometimes he will, and sometimes there'll be no way out. But once you live in that framework, that philosophical or the framework of commitment, then psikat halacha starts to sound more intellectually honest, right? Now, the reason I'm doing Akira Dovrim and Torah with you, even though it doesn't come up quite as much, right? Like I said, it does come up, even in modern psak, is because it is the epitome of the extreme within this framework, right? It's the recognition that even within a framework which believes that halacha can be hard and halacha can be painful and halacha can demand things from you that you don't want to do, still, there's a mechanism within halacha that says, in hachinami, there are certain circumstances where not only will we let you bend the bounds, right, stretch the bounds of plausibility, but will actually give you the tools to uproot what the law is. Because we recognize that there might be something you need to do that is outside the bounds of the law. Right? Again, how does that work? How is that called commitment?
So right now we're only protecting another law.
What?
So right now we're
okay.
only protecting
now,
another law.
Okay, now, often, correct. Now, often, usually, right, what we're talking about is breaking the law for the purpose of protecting the law. Right, that's classic Akira Dovrim and HaTorah. Though, as we saw, the Rambam philosophically, right, takes this model and seems to, at least in Perashat Mishnayot, open the possibility of Avir Lishma, which is not one halacha for another; it's just a halacha for broader spiritual goals.
Right. This isn't a systematic thing.
You're right. It's not a systematic thing. But again, what I want to point out is why is any of that legitimate? The reason it's legitimate is because, again, the ethos behind it is we are committed to halacha, right? We are committed to God. We're willing to accept that things are hard, right? We're willing to accept that things are not the way we want always. Elamai, Hashem didn't want it to be that there was no way of bending the law or even breaking it when absolutely necessary to maintain the integrity of the system as a whole.
As of now, I didn't get that Sanhedrin could say that halacha is not like this for a certain amount of time. Only Navi, I think.
No.
Did you say
Sanhedrin? Yeah. We've already gotten it.
Sanhedrin get rid of halacha for a month?
Temporarily. Well, let's hold it. Yes, Lasha. Okay? Now we noted. The Rambam takes this misvara. Right? I think I mentioned briefly that the Torah's Nevi'im, Tzvi Hirsch Chayes, suggests the Svar is more of Chatei Kedei Sheyizk Chavercha. Well,
just be clear, the being Okar Dever Metara, like don't pull the shofar on Rosh Hashanah when it's Shabbos.
So that's passive, which we said might not be an Akira, might be, but fine. Okay, yeah.
But even if you say it's an Akira, that's still built in the system to protect another one of its laws, which
correct, but it's a but it's built into the system that sometimes you're allowed to break the law in the books.
Right, but
fine.
Only for another law, as of now.
Fine.
For that specific type.
Fine. No, in a Hanami, the classic ones in the Gemara are, yes, to protect...
A more important law.
Whatever, more important. A temporarily law that's under attack, Mashiach, right? However you want to take it, right? In a Hanami. Okay. So again, I'm not saying that an average Shaila you should expect Akira Dovrim HaTorah. I would hope you wouldn't, right? But again, I was giving a shiur this Shabbos, which is a dry run for next week, which is I think one more shiur I'm going to give on these external factors on Psak, broadly speaking, and then we'll decide whether we go into some specifics or we do what I like doing, which is at some point just taking Tshuvot and just tracing, showing you methodologically, not just reading Tshuvot, but taking apart Tshuva and showing you what they're doing, right? The types of moves that they make. We'll decide. You guys can decide. I love doing that. I have a lot of fun with that. So I'm doing one more, which will bother you probably even more than what we're doing now. And the guy said, "What exactly is the point of these shirim? Like, are you trying to shake people's emunah? Like, that's your goal?"
He said, "Yes."
And I said, "Yes, that's my goal, exactly." I said, "No, my goal is to make, you know, to show certain sugyas that are the radical expression of what happens all the time in Psak at a small level. But I want you to be uncomfortable. I want you to get to the point where you're uncomfortable enough to recognize, again, which I know you don't want to, and I know it's hard, and it'll take a while for you really to internalize it, the notion that halacha is not, does not exist in this sterile world where there aren't human pressures. Right? It exists in the human world, and therefore it's always going to be a shtickle messy, a little bit messy, and that's okay. Right? And again, how exactly you just saw it philosophically is a bit hard. Right? But it is. Right? That's the thing, is you... Right. Sometimes you just got to look at the data and say, "I can't deny this is a thing." Right. You can't deny is a thing. Right. Akir Davar Natar, you can't deny is a thing. Right. We'll see that the thing I'm going to introduce next week may not be a thing. Right. The Ritva is so bothered by it, he said this is not a thing. It looks like a thing, but it's not a thing. It doesn't exist. Right. Okay. Fine. Right. Not everything that looks like a thing is a thing. Sometimes it's a non thing or nothing. In other words, fine. Okay.
Right now, we only had that a Beis Din or Sanhedrin could do this, right? Not a...
Correct. We haven't...
Or Navi.
Or, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Now, where does this authority come from? So, the Rambam says it comes me Svara. Okay? Mm-hmm. The Rajba has two different formulations. Oh, you weren't here last
time. It's only good for the general. Yeah, he was.
I mean the
joke about the physics.
The Rambam Svara, to remember, was the amputation to save the body, mashallah.
Right. Okay? Yeah. For the general, yeah. But the specific
okay.
Would be harmful.
So you look at the Rajba. The Rajba has two tshuvot. He has different formulations. In one, in Gimel, you know, let's see. Let's start with Hey Reish Lamed Ches, the top of the second page, right? He says, V'dama sheshav lechachem Yaakov ben Hakasaf. I don't know that is Bal Yeshiva b'toli Tola. Ahagim in Azuv Yasser Ofrim. It's the second page, right? The second shuva. Look, start with the second shuva. Hey Reish Lamed Ches.
Hey
Reish Lamed Ches.
Yeah,
yes.
I got it now.
It says Chelik Hey and Shuvas Rashba. The Rajba has thousands of shuvot, so they're divided. Okay, fine. Anyways, he says da. Kilach lashon rachat ishbor garem ul olam kol meishar meishar v'naderach lufne ha'am l'ashem achshalat ha'am tzarech lalot menakal v'chamura. So sometimes, right, a soft tongue will break bone, right, blah, 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 all these more things, right? Right? V'ein odlin kol chaval v'yachad. You don't take all things as equal. V'achar kavanas ha'lev ha'dvar ma'murim. And they go by the heart. Kvar yadata g'dola v'ir l'shma mi mitzvah shalo l'shma. And therefore us, we don't have the power to actually impose punishment unless necessary. What does he say? Okay, what is he saying? So he was asked a specific shaila about giving musar, right? Cases where there's a chiyuv tochacha. The Rashba tells him, look, even in cases when Me'ikra Din, you really should give Tochacha. Like, the rule in the books, right? All the rules point to the fact that you should give Tochacha. He says, Gadol Aveir Lishma. Sometimes, that's not the most productive thing. And he says, and therefore us, who we don't have coercive power, right? We're always functioning basically on persuasion. It's not always good to impose tochacha, harsh fire and brimstone, even when that's what the halacha calls for. Now, he's clearly means this shuvah a little bit rhetorically, you know, a little bit pastorally. He's talking to a rabbi and explaining to him how he should treat his community. But within that, he says, why is it true that I tell you, you shouldn't look at the halachos of Tochacha and say, okay, I'm following what's on the books.
Lishma is greater than...
He says, Aver Lishma, you know, Akira's Davar Matara. Right? What's the Rajba saying? Right, again, I don't know how much the Rajba means this formally and how much he means it pastorally. But what's the point, clearly, he's making? What is the equation of those two?
I don't see the Akira's Davar Matara being missed it.
But the last one, he quotes... Muskar b'Sanhedrin Mivamos. Right, he quotes the two sugyas of Onshin Magim Onshin Shlomo Naitein Akiras Dovah Naitera. Those are the sugya. Right, right. He hints at it. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. He hints at it, meaning he's hinting at it. He's saying, what's he saying? Right. I think what he's saying is, what's the svara of Aveir Lishma? What's, like when the Gemara says Gadol Aveir Lishma Mitzvah Shlomo Lishma.
According to the Rambam, it's very easy.
Right, so I tend to think that he's going in a similar direction to the Rambam, right? As saying that what does it mean?
Individual
that,
case may be more beneficial.
Yeah, that in individual cases, what technically the law in the books is counterproductive to the end goals of the system, right?
Yes,
I think that's what he's saying, right? And he's saying that's really behind Aveir Lishma, that's behind the Gerizma Menet Torah. Again, how formally does it mean it? I don't know, but. Right, I think he's going in a similar direction to the Rambam. Right, I think I can't prove it. Right, but I think that's basically the svara he's coming at. In another tshuva, he says something else which is a bit strange, and he says Amadi is the one before that. Amadi al kol atainos bekuntra zeh veroani shem eidim ne'emon emitzel habrurim rashem in liknos knas momono onesh logoth. If these witnesses are believed, so you're allowed to give a knas or even punish. Physically, even though they didn't formally have coercive power, hakol lefi mashiyir Elohim v'zem mekayim olam. Whatever you think is necessary, and that's what keeps the world going. She'im ata amidin hakol al hadinim haktuvim b'Torah. Because if you only keep the laws as they're written in the Torah, v'lo lano shalak moshe ancha haTorah v'chavod chayotzei b'zeh. If you only stick to the letter of the law, nimtza haolam charev. The world will be destroyed.
Fine.
Shainu made the Masra, that you only need the Masra. Ukemosh Amruzal, and then in a radical line, he quotes a radical passage in the Gemara itself, which is Lo Harva Yerushalayim El Shemidu Divrei Maldin Torah. The Yerushalayim was destroyed because they kept the Torah.
Where is that line?
What?
The last line in the
Rashba. The last line in the Rashba.
Ukemosh Amruzal.
Right? Right? Again, the Rajah isn't totally clear about what he means, but what's he saying? He's saying, look, why is Akira's Dover Minotaur there? Because you can explain it in different ways. But basically, you know, the Torah, if you're a stickler, always, and you don't understand the bigger picture, right? You understand that sometimes the best thing to do is to, you know, do things that are not within the letter of the law, then your obsession with the nitty-gritty is going to lead to the destruction of the system.
But it sounds like, I don't know, it sounds like very close to conservative or...
So this, so like I said, this is the danger, right? And again, this is why I find it hard to explain to people who aren't learned, and even to many people who are learned, where I diverge from certain halachic writers in the non-Orthodox movement, right? Because, again, to take the classic example, and I've mentioned this before, the conservative driving tshuva, okay, in the 1950s, is written not as a lechatchila. It's not. It's written as a kiruv document. It says in it beferush, that the goal of this document is to bring people into shul, and if they give them the Torah, the shul, and they have an inspiring experience, they'll keep more Torah. And if we don't let them... What?
So they're really into shul.
Yeah. And it's written as a kiruv document.
Right.
Right? It's written as a kiruv document. That this is necessary under the circumstances to bring people into shul. So you look at it and you say, okay, you know, I don't agree. But what? We have no precedent in halacha for bending halacha. We don't have a kiruv document. We don't have psikat halacha b'shalat chak. Right? Why is this not legitimate? Right? Or why, or even if it's not legitimate, right? Why is this a breaking point? Right? Why is this so different than what we do?
Yeah.
And again, I think the difference has to be, right? It really is, not has to be, it really is the question of, right, what permeates all these tshuvot? The notion that we are committed to the system as a whole, and we're only going to invoke these types of arguments in the most dire of circumstances, where we think that's what's best for the system as a whole. And even then, we're not always going to be able to do it. I mean, that's what these things are, right? That's what these types of arguments are saying. When it becomes a pattern, right? Or it stretches the bounds of plausibility, meaning you present it as if this is like a shas hadchak, and you present specious arguments, right? Even psikat halacha b'shas hadchak has to be done well, right? It's not like everything goes, right? Again, akira d'avinat Torah, when you're allowed to use it, means that if we're allowed to use it, everything goes, right? But we're not always allowed to use it, and we very rarely do. Psikat halacha b'shas hadchak means we very rarely use it. That by definition, if it becomes a lifestyle, and even psikat halacha b'shas hadchak means I try to get to a result. Not I always will succeed. Right? Is that I try. Right? I accept things that are less plausible, not things that are not plausible. Right? Yesh gvul.
Right?
And again, what you see in all these systems is that, again, you're right. It sounds not orthodox, right? But that's the... And that's why some of it... Now, let me just say one thing. Rav Lichtenstein once made a point, and which is very telling, in an article he wrote about Kavanah Briya. And he said, since the conservative movement started using Kavanah Briya, left, right, and center, right, and then left, right, and center, they just use it for everything.
That's
a Gemara in Brachos, Yates. But it's not like a made-up quote, it's a Gemara, right? It just sounds not orthodox, but it's Gemara, right? He said, since the conservative movement has used it, something very unfortunate happened, which is Orthodox poskim stopped using it. Right? And even if they're really using it deep down, right? They won't say it because they're afraid that it's going to be misused by someone who doesn't have mechuyavut to the system. So Lichtenstein says, Mitzad echad, I understand the fear. Mitzad sheni, it's a Gemara. Right, you can't throw out a Gemara because people have misused. Yes, we paskin like that Gemara. So as Rav Lichtenstein said, the Gemara says in the end of the day, in the Bavli at least, Godlo kavod abriyot shelo dochel asorim haTorah applies to lav delo sasur, right? Derabbanans. But Rav Lichtenstein said, yeah, but since when does rhetoric not mean something? Meaning, if Chazal were fully capable of saying Gadol Kavod Abriya Shadoche Yisrei Derabbanan, right? Why did they frame it as Gadol Kavod Abriya Shadoche Lo Saseh Shabbatara if they meant Lo Tasur?
Right?
That's so counterintuitive that the Gemara says they laughed at him before he managed to convince them that this was the right read. Because it's so counterintuitive.
Oh, fine, but regardless, the halacha at the end was...
No, but again, Sir Lichtenstein points this out, Rav Asher Weiss points this out. All these principles in halacha, they function at two levels. One is formally. When does it apply? Like, when is it an override of a halacha? Right? When are the formal times it's built into the system? Then there's the second level at which it functions, which is, even if it's not going to override halacha, when Chazal makes statements like that, the ethos behind it should shape the type of halachic decisions you make. Right? They should influence the type of posek you are, right? Not in necessarily quantifiable ways, right? But the notion that human dignity is part of the halachic system, right, should shape the way you think about halacha. That doesn't mean you can predict it.
It makes sense, but the posek never mentioned it because it's never considered halachic. No,
they really don't. They really try to avoid it and they try to mask it in other things. And he says, right, and what he argues, is that, right, it's a shame that once something gets misused, the people who should be using it become afraid of using it, right? And it's right, and that's the problem I think a lot in areas of shas hadchak, where people with less mechuyavut to halacha love the notion that halacha is over flexible and we can matter anything, right? And where there's a rabbinic will, there's a rabbinic way, right? That's like the old, right, horrible statement by a certain person, right? Which Dr. Berger, what?
Which person?
Blue Greenberg, right? Who said, where there's a rabbinic will, there's a halachic way. Where there's a rabbinic will, there's a rabbinic way. She founded JOFA, Jewish Orthodox Feminist Alliance.
Ah, I see.
Dr. David Berger likes cynically referring to that comment as, you may get this pun, but only if you know Jewish history. Im tirtzu,
ein
zu halacha.
I don't get it. I mean, I understand what you're saying.
Herzl had said about Israel, Im Tirtzu, Ein Zu Agadah.
If you say it in English.
Right, Im Tirtzu, Ein Zu Agadah. If you want, it's not a dream. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But in Hebrew, it's Agadah. Right, Agadata. Right?
Right.
Right? So Dr. Berger played on it, right? Which is Im Tirtzu, Ein Zu Halacha. Right? If you want, it won't be Halacha. Right? If you, you know, people like, whatever, forget it, forget you. Forget you, fine? So he says, but what's the point? Is that, it is dangerous to acknowledge that halacha has mechanisms for psikar al-chavashat chak, and kal vachomer, that it has a kira davar mina Torah.
Right.
Right? But to deny that it exists is to say that halacha is a much more sterile system than it is by its own, right, by its own self-understanding, so to speak. Right? Meaning, if you want to be open to what halacha has to say to you, right, what the Torah has to say to you, you can't superimpose on it, not to the left, not to the right, not to the openness, and not to the closeness, right, what it is not. Right? So sure, people who are less committed to halacha don't like all its rules. And people who are very committed to halacha find it hard to swallow that it has built in a tremendous amount of flexibility. Right? Both sides have to, if you want to be honest with halachism, have to recognize, gam yizeh v'gam yizeh al tanach yodecha. Right? Yes, it's a system of laws. Yes, it requires sacrifice. No, that doesn't mean it doesn't have built-in mechanisms which are actually quite extreme. Okay. The Rajba, in a third place, says, this is in the Dharm Daf Tzadi, suggests that no, it is actually somehow built into Lotasur. Right? In case you wanted to say, how could Chazal come up with something without a Pasuk? It is. It's in Lotasur. And they say, Now, okay, the actual context is quite extreme. It's really quite extreme. It goes like this. Now, halacha is that if a woman commits adultery, she's also to her husband. Chazal were afraid. What?
That's pretty extreme.
Chazal were afraid. Wait till you hear what Chazal did to that. Chazal said that they were worried that women would want to commit adultery. And therefore, what would they do?
Get the ksuba money.
Nope. Shoot. They would tell their husbands. No, they wouldn't care about the ksuba. They would go to their husbands and say, I committed adultery. And then their husbands would divorce them and they could marry. Right? They didn't want to commit adultery. They wanted to have an affair with someone, but they wanted to do it beheter. So what would they do? They would lie. And they would say to their husbands, I committed adultery. Oh. Their husbands would be forced to divorce them. And then they could go marry beheter their wannabe lovers.
Asking to get divorced didn't work out too well for them.
So what did Chazal do? Chazal did something quite radical. Chazal said, if a woman says that she committed adultery, you're not allowed to believe her. She committed adultery, it's a Mishnah.
I know, isn't it possible a chazaka that she's lying, and then therefore...
Rav Moshe Feinstein says that if you believe her, yeah, they say it's a chazaka, she's lying. What if you really do believe her? Right, she gives you evidence, she gives you the whole story, right? Not Edom, but she gives you a whole story, makes a lot of sense, right? You know what Rav Moshe says? If you believe her, you are an apikoiris. Because you deny the chazakas of Chazal. They know your wife better. It's never true. They're always lying. Okay. Right? That's how extreme Rav Moshe says this.
Can you just say...
Which, by the way, comes to a very strange thing. Because nowadays, right? I'm going to tell you that the way this plays itself out is that if a woman comes to her husband and says, I committed an affair, do you know what the rabbi will tell her?
No, you didn't.
You should go to marriage counseling because you clearly have a problem in your marriage because you're making up lies that are trying to get you in the marriage. And they'll tell the husband, you should function in marriage counseling. Never believe her, because at the moment you believe her, you'll be chayav to divorce her. That's the halacha, right? If you actually come to believe her, you'll be chayav to divorce her. But you have to go to marriage counseling as if, right? We like play these mental games. Right? I mean, I've talked to rabbis. Like, this is actually the mental games we play. But
so can't you very simply say the Mishnah only talking about there's a chazaka that she...
No, it says always, 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 always. A woman, chazaka, she's not believed. Husband can't believe her.
Because there was a chazaka, they instituted that you can't believe
her. So this is what the Acharnim try to figure out, right? Which is, what exactly is going on here, because it's clearly not the case that every single woman is lying, right? And it's a subject of Raisa.
Wait, the Mishnah of Leolam was the...
Yes! That's it! Never! You don't believe her!
It was a Mishnah.
I didn't put it on. It's a Mishnah of Nedarim. Right? Now, the Rajba says, Mazeh. Right? Right? How could Chazal do this?
Right.
Right? Meaning, what's the problem? The problem is, right, let's say the Chazaka is right 70% of the time. That means 30% of the time the Chazal are saying the husband should keep living with his wife, Be'isser. And one of the big problems that the poskim deal with is that it's very nice for the husband. But the woman knows it's true. She's asked her to sleep with her husband.
Right.
How can she sleep with her husband?
Oh, it's not really her choice that much.
What do you mean, not her choice? She knows it's us, sir. Right?
I mean, factually, it wasn't really her choice back then.
Well, what are you talking about? Halacha is one of the first systems in the world to recognize marital rape. Right? A husband can't force himself to be with his wife. It's us, sir. It's Gemara Nedarim. Tafchaf, you can't. Halacha is one of the first systems to recognize marital rape. America didn't recognize it in the 1950s or 60s, 70s maybe. Right? Halacha, it's in the Gemara Nedarim. Right? What do you mean, not her choice? Right? She can say... What do you mean? I think I'm usher, right? I'm usher, right? She should lie. She should say I'm a nida, right? She should avoid it at all costs. Like, mazeh, right? Right? And the Achronim really struggle with this. So the Rajba says, how do I solve these problems? I think it's a Tanai Bezdin, right? It's a condition made by Chazal, so that the Bnei Yisrael won't be prutos. They won't lie to get themselves out of marriage. Right? No problem. Akira's davar min haTorah. Kol heicha di ikam ishum migdar milsa ki di isa bereish berakah isha. Right? And the shaklu v'Torah b'bayi milsa bezin masan lakram b'davar min haTorah im lav. Ramin tashmai lav tishmuun. V'il omr l'cha leich leich avor alachas mikol ha-mitzvos. L'cha leich avor alachas mikol ha-mitzvos v'Torah. Kigun el yobar ha-karmal. V'kol l'fisha shmal alma masnin mikol makom v'din shmikol shayni. Right? And then we went through the whole thing. And then he summarized the whole Gemara. And he says, 1, 2, 3, go down to 5 lines from the bottom of this. V'lo shachacham okrin davar min haTorah midaitan. It's not that they just do it of their own accord. Ella achas mi mitzvahs haTorah hi lishmoa al divrei haShofet asher yeh bayomim mohem v'kol shehin roin lahati yosorach mutter min haTorah. He says, where does it come from? Mutasar. Right, the same mitzvah which obligates us to listen to Chazal obligates to listen to them even k'neged haTorah. If they deem it fit. Right? So far, now we've seen... First, we saw like three versions of a svara. It's a svara. It's sort of like avera lishma. Right? Now the Rajba says, no. There's also an authority here. That is when Hashem says, listen to the chachamim. What he meant was, listen to them, usually, to keep the Torah. And lifamim...
To break
the Torah. Right? Now the Tajbeit says... What?
No, not to break the Torah.
To break the Torah.
No, because it's in the Torah.
Well, yeah, obviously.
To break the laws, it's on the books because there's a built-in override clause.
Yeah, okay.
Fine. That's called breaking the law on the books.
Okay.
Right?
But there's a law that says you can break.
Yes.
Yeah.
Fine.
I want to be clear.
It's to break the law on the books.
Precise.
Right? Okay. The Tajbeit has a formulation that maybe it's part of their general koach of takanos. I won't read that one inside. Now, the Kuntres Devei Sofrim is a radical one, and he suggests as follows. I didn't even give it to you inside, but I'll say it outside. There is a famous stira. The Yerushalmi says that are you chayav to listen to Bezin if they're wrong?
Yeah.
No. The Yerushalmi in the beginning of Hurriyot says, Lo tasra min adavar ashi yagid l'cha yamin u'smol. Yochol! I might have thought, even if you said left is right and right is left, Talmud Lomar, Leich, Yamin is small, Rak, Imram Lachal Yamin, Yamin, Mas Mosh is small.
The Bavli says the opposite.
No!
Really?
That's what everyone thinks. The Bavli says.
The Sekta says the opposite.
No! The Bavli says the same!
What?
The beginning of Oreos, Dav Beis, Amid Beis, the Bavli says as follows. The Gemara says that if you have a Chacham, Haroi Tamina Roi La Hara.
Right, they have to,
right? Yes. A Tamina Roi La Hara who makes a mistake.
Yeah.
When the Sanhedrin is making a mistake, he brings his own karban chatas.
Right.
So the Gemara says, what's the case? If this Talmud, as big a Talmud Chacham as he is, made the same mistake as Sanhedrin, so when they bring a par helam davar shel tzibur, right, that's the karban they bring, right? So he should, then he's yotze.
Right.
If he knew they were wrong, it's a mazid, and therefore he doesn't get to bring a karban.
He should get blood
mockers. Punish, whatever. So in what case is it shogeg, but not shogeg with Bezdin? So what does the Gemara say?
Your right hand, your left hand.
No. So the Gemara says, he knew that Sanhedrin was wrong. V'ta'a b'mitzvah l'shmo'a divrei chachamim. But he made a mistake on the parameters of when you're supposed to listen to the Sanhedrin. He thought you were supposed to listen even when they're wrong.
Uh-huh.
But they, right? Now, why does everybody think that the Bavli says the opposite? Why does everyone say?
Rashi quotes it.
Because Rashi quotes a version of the Sifrei that we don't have.
Oh, Sifrei, ah!
Which says, Lo tasum ed davar shekinu l'cho smala, free l'orol chayimin shu smala, smala shel yamin. Now, our Sifrei has a very important difference. It doesn't say that. It says,
Lo.
Afilu, no. Afilu nirim be'einecha. Even if it seems. Like right is left and left is right. Not that it is. Right, not if they're wrong. But if it seems to you, okay, it seems to you, that's very nice. So you don't know as well as the Sanhedrin, big deal. Right. Right? That's a big difference between right is left is right, and it seems like right is left.
I thought right is left and left is right was in terms of tefillin. I just like stomach to say a factually incorrect thing.
Okay.
Right. If I say this paper is not a paper, I thought it was like if I say,
okay,
luckily you got to put the film.
Okay, but neither the Bavli nor the Yerushalmi says that. Both the Bavli and Yerushalmi say it's not true, explicitly, okay, right? So Rav Chana Wasserman has a very radical read, which is no, shtem emes. Normally the rule is, he says, what's the halacha? If Chazal tell you we think this is the halacha and they're wrong, so then
don't do it.
Don't listen. But if they tell you, no, right now we're going to be Oker Davar Min HaTorah and tell you to do left when it's right. But we're telling you that it's because of a violation, meaning we're invoking our power of Akir Davar Min HaTorah. That's the Sifrei, that I'll feel Omer Chaim in too small, but small shall you in. Right? Meaning, if they're making a mistake, in a Chanami, don't listen. But if they're not making a mistake, they're Bechavona telling you to break the Torah.
Right.
By the power invested them with by God, that they're sometimes allowed to override the rules. Right? And that's not called violating the rules because it's built into the rule system, they're allowed to violate the rules. Fine? Get all messy on me. Right? Fine? Fine. That's his argument, okay?
Like them when Chazal make a mistake.
If you think
Chazal made a mistake, that you shouldn't pass like them. Even if they're wrong.
Fine. Now we've already noted.
I don't think that.
That despite the fact the simple read of the Gemara is that this is only by passive things, because either that's not an Akira, it's not a Chamor enough Akira, right? However you want to understand it. Tosfos, we already read, says that, well, if you really, really need to, then even Akira Stavra Matarva Kumbase is permitted, but only if you really need to, right? Only in other places, only if it's Dabra Hadome, right? Only if it seems like you're not violating the Torah. Because then, even though you are violating the Torah, it's not so egregious. It doesn't look like it, or something like that.
Right.
Which is difficult.
Yeah,
right? Yes. It is quite difficult.
That wasn't for Shea Baltase. That was only for the...
What?
That wasn't for Shea Baltase.
No, that was even for Kumbase.
Right.
It's even for Kumbase. Well,
not only for Kumbase, it doesn't need to look like it. But for Shea Baltase...
Shea Baltase doesn't even have to. Right, Nechanami. Okay. Now,
No, I'm running...
Okay, what do I want to do of this? Let me see, what do I want to do? I did actually put this at the end. Right, if you turn all the way to the end, it's not just Tosfos. Right, Tosfos, right, it's not just Tosfos that says this. There is one sort of important authority that says this in addition to Tosfos, and that is the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi in Gittin says this as well, that Nishman Ma'adayim Bitlo Reis Mavutl Der Shem Gamliel O Eino Yochel Vadlo Hosev at the last page. Altano Yoz Omer Shem Gamliel My Taima De Rebbe Dvar Taru Shivata Ve'inam Rosh Lo Bitel De Rein Okrin De Vaitara. Right, explicitly, right, what the Bavli, remember the Bavli said isn't Hafkas Kiddushin, right, uprooting Kiddushin, isn't that Akir Taru and Taru Kumbasei, right? Because you're taking a married woman and now saying she's not married and she can sleep with somebody else. Isn't that Kumbasei? You're letting her commit adultery. So the Bavli said, no, it's a different mechanism. It's Hafkas Kiddushin. Call it right? Which is right. Different.
You need the Rabban.
The Yerushalmi just says, no, that's just Akir Taru and Taru. Yeah, that's fine. Right, that's fine. That is, like I said, that's Tosfos in several places, okay? I didn't give this to you, but the truth, I thought I had actually put this on it, but apparently not. There is sort of a disturbing machlokas in the Achronim of who can do this. Is it limited to like Sanhedrin? But there are shitos which suggest that maybe it's every bezin three. There are some radical shitos in the Achronim.
For what? Just like their community or for
everything? Yeah, or whatever, but can invoke it.
That's
okay.
Crazy.
There is such a chuva like this in the rain that touches on this. Okay. What do I want to do here?
I just have two. To be ochre, all tonight.
But you need three.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, so I want to just do a few more things. Okay.
How about grab?
One of the key rules that exists here is this notion that even if they're ochre davim haTorah, it can only be Lishah. Right? That's what the Gemara says. Lishah.
Right.
Good. Define the word Lishah for me.
An hour. Amount of time.
So there's two ways of doing it.
I don't think an hour. I assume either a set amount of time or one has an end. Meaning either it could be until people stop acting this way, which is a vague, but there's an end to it, or it's for a year, which is
perfect.
Vague.
Right? The two ways of understanding that are either temporarily, right, or Litzorech hasha'ah, right? Meaning, not for a set amount of time, but as long as it is necessary. Meaning, what's the difference? I mean, one is to say it's only fine if they set an end date, right? The other one is to say, no, as long as b'mehus is temporary. Meaning, it's as long as it is deemed necessary for our time and place, it's legitimate, even if there's no end in sight.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Good. So, if you look at skip to 9, okay, look at the Rambam and Shofar, right? I know this is a bit, whatever. This was written as an outline, so, it summarizes the sugya if you wanted to learn it themselves. Look at 9, the Rambam in Hilchos Shofar, second Rambam there, okay? Yom Dov Shor Rosh Hashanah Shechal Yot B'Shabbos Ein Token Shofar B'Chol Makom. Right, this is the halacha, right? We don't blow Shofar on Shabbos.
Yeah.
Right? Afal Pi Shatzkiya Mishum Shvus Umnadin Hayesh Token Yavo Asa Shel Torah V'Yitzchei Shvus Shel Devrayim. Even though Tzkiya is only Asa Mi D'Rabbanan, and you really should therefore blow even on Shabbos, we don't. V'Loma Ein Token Gzeira Hashem Yitlenu B'Yadav Yelchenu V'Mishit Kol V'Yeren Arba'amos V'Sarabim Amotziyam Yerushas Loshus V'Yavo Lidiyas Roskila. We're worried you might carry it. Shakol Chayavim B'Tzkiya V'Ena Kol Chayavim B'Tzkoa. Because everyone's Chayavim Tzkiya Shofar, not everyone is an expert. Okay. So the Kesef Mishnah asks on this, and he says, this is in Nidarim, and he says, V'avakav das signum perge isha rabba, t'davka midashe v'altase, matzu rabbanon ikre mididareis, avalo mididukum vasei, v'okhanami amran das rabbeinu, indam reshuas chol machanako purim v'kum vasei, hu shareanu omrim kum v'chol, yeish lomar da'adam rin hasam, demigdar milso matzu akre mididareis, avikum vasei, v'chizuk divrei chachamim, v'ashir divru, v'avakav lovi beg migdar milso. Okay, you know what? Let me rephrase it here. Right? What's striking about the Rambam? This is just the Rambam's record of the Gemara. What's striking is that what? What does the Rambam not mention? Or, to be fair, what's never mentioned anywhere in the Halakha? No, that there's no time limit.
Oh.
Right? The Gemara says that Akir Zohar and Torah only works if it's Lasha.
Right.
But when we record in Halacha, we record as if it's forever.
Yeah.
Right? Right. So what is the so what does the Kesef Mishnah say? So if you look at his second to last line, he says V'yesh lomar kozer tozer reik shloshim minim afol afkin koch b'yachom lakor dem v'natar mekom v'asev v'makom sheish panim v'tam l'davar v'alakom yish koch lakor v'hacham yachish v'cham tzrich and chizuk shabar yish panim v'tam l'davar. He says maybe you can do it when there's reason. Now what is he getting at? So the this is the point Maritz Chiyus makes. Maritz Chiyus says, look, it's one thing to say that Kirsar Matar is only okay if it's temporary time-wise.
Right.
But there doesn't seem to be a time limit on any of these things. What do Rishonim and Echonim talk about all the time? Yesh panim ladavar. There's a reason for it. Mm-hmm. Right? What are they saying? So his argument, as I said, is that Litzorech HaShah, Lishah should be better translated, not as temporary in the sense that, like, it has a specific end date.
Right.
Litzorech HaShah.
Right.
As long as it's deemed necessary, meaning it constantly needs to be justified. Meaning, we understand that this is not the normative law, but as long as necessary, we consistently invoke our right to override.
For, like, low plugs and such?
What?
How can you answer for low plugs and things like that?
Because it's bigadol necessary, right?
I mean, let's say you just live in an age where people don't really walk outside of a...
So you'd say, bigadol, it's necessary, right? For the integrity of the system in general. Right now, trust me, many people ask this. They say, nowadays, right? Nowadays, there's an Erev anywhere. There's no Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, right?
Why are these... Because in the corner of the Rambam, there is an Erev.
No, but everyone else raises the question the opposite, which is, if nowadays an Erev everywhere, blah, blah, right? And the answer is, bigadol, it's, you know, necessary. Something like that. Now, look, so there are two ways of understanding why the Rambam says, right, the Rambam gives no indication of when it's going to be, you know, uprooted. One is to say what I just said, it's a Tzorech HaShah. What's the other way? Why shouldn't the Rambam say this has a time limit? Why shouldn't he clarify that if what makes it
You don't need legitimate? A time limit.
No, but I just said if you do.
Oh.
Right?
That's the easy way.
So the Rambam himself... Right? This is nice lumbus. The Rambam himself gives a different answer, which is, do you remember what you didn't believe me was a real thing? Right? A real chakira, which was when the Gemara says that Shevel Tase...
Was it Allah says?
Is it that it's... That Shevel Tase is Akira Dabra Min HaTorah, which is Akira Dabra Min HaTorah, which is Mutter? Or what the Gemara is telling you is Akira Dabra Min HaTorah is... sorry, Shevel Tase is not an Akira. And you told me that didn't exist.
Oh, it's not an Akira.
Yeah,
works.
Who says that?
The Rambam, apparently.
The Rambam in the Parashat Mishnah says, it's a case in Kachem no one get to. Lefi shahimanut milasot eno masa. He said, why is it that we can do this? Himanut milasot eno masa. Because not doing is not doing.
Right?
Get over yourself. Right? Not doing is not doing. Right? So... the possible way of understanding why it is that the that we don't see explicit time limitations is either to say, in a chanami, l'sha'a means time limitation. But most of them, as we saw, are not really Akira Dabra Min HaTorah. They're just Shevel Tase. And Akira Min HaTorah is really a term that we limit to the cases when Kum Vaaseh is necessary, or Migdar Milsa.
According to that reasoning, when does the Tzorach end?
So according to that, if it's passive, it's much more expansive. It doesn't necessarily need to.
It never ends. It's after Shah.
Or it doesn't have to.
Yeah,
right.
No. When Ars and Hedjim made, when the Gemara is made, or the Mishnah, sorry, Gemara, when Tanan made the halacha of don't pull the shofar on Shabbos. When did that end? Because it wasn't when the Tzorech ended. Because we don't have Tzorech anymore. We still do it according to that.
And it doesn't need to.
So again, if you think,
or you can just say we're not going with them. It's possible.
Or whatever. You say, look, if you say, like, the Rambam seems to say here that himanut milasot ain't a masa, that whenever you don't do something, it's not a masa, and then say this isn't a, the maskana of the Gemara is this isn't akira, so it's not limited by lashah.
Right?
Or you say what the Maharsh Chiyus says, which is no, it's lefi tzorech hashah, and therefore it could go on for thousands of years. Now you'll tell me nowadays it's not needed. Okay, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I don't know. I'm not the one who gets to decide whether
it's not. But if it's not needed, then the Maharsh would agree you'd be chayav to blow shofar.
Ostensibly. Right now, that doesn't tell you who decides that in a family. Okay, fine. We started discussing the philosophy of it last week, but let me throw out another, just a formulation of it again, okay? One more time. look back at the Rambam in Yesodei Torah when he talks about Navi. Okay? And I think this is where you really get the Rambam's philosophy. We started talking about the Rambam's philosophy here, but now I want to just sort of maybe flesh it out one more time. The Rambam in Hilchos Yesodei Torah says as follows. You got it? It's number 6 in this. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Davar baru mefurish b'Torah she mitzvah medes la'olam ol me'olamim ein la lo shinim v'lo giron v'lo tosefes. Shnemar is called davar she'anochi mitzaveh eschem ha'osot tishmeru la'asos osis v'alav v'lo segrami menu. It is clear. I'm sorry. Something that is clear in the Torah is a mitzvah forever and ever and ever. No change, no addition, no subtraction. Anything I've commanded, bal tosef, bal tigra, don't add, don't subtract. V'ne'emar v'haniglot lanu v'aneinu adalam lasos kol divrei Torah zos. Ho lo mata shekol divrei Torah mitzuvin anu lasos anad olam. So from here we learn the Torah has to say forever. V'cheinu omer chukas olam l'doros eichem. It is a law for your generations. V'ne'emar lo v'ashamayimi. And it's not in heaven. Right? I mean, the Rambam tells you, the Torah is forever and ever and ever and ever. It was given to man. It's done. No more changes from Shamayim. Ha lo mata. And because the Torah is eternal, a Navi can't change anything. And therefore, if a Navi comes, a Jew or non-Jew, and makes a miracle and says, God sent me to change the Torah, add or subtract, or to interpret it against the way we understand it, or he comes to say that the Torah's mitzvahs were only temporary. That is a false Navi who's coming to contradict Moshe. When he gets killed for talking about God, something that God didn't say. Right? And God said it's forever and he's not man to lie. Okay?
Yeah.
That's pretty clear. Rambam's pretty strong about that. Halacha Dalet. And if he tries to uproot his interpretation, he gets killed. Because he tried to uproot it. But if he tells you to do it, it's all mutter. Explain to me theologically that Rambam.
Oh, well, I know what you're going to say. The simplest is because God said you could do it for sure.
That's not what he says.
What?
That's not what he says. The Rambam is actually very careful. The Rambam is much more careful. You're not being a careful reader of Rambam. You're being a reductionist. Read the Rambam carefully and explain to me theologically why the Rambam thinks this is legitimate.
Well, he's not really being okay when it's only for a shah.
Yeah.
Then it's not removing the halacha. The halacha is good in the general. And
yeah, you're still saying that it's an internal law.
Sharper.
Eesh.
Right? Slightly sharper. The nuance here is important.
I'm sorry.
He's not saying the law is like something. He's just saying we're not doing it now.
Mm.
That's exactly it. Right? The Rambam is telling you what? What can't a Navi do, and what can he do?
He can't change the law, but he can tell you what to do.
Correct. He can tell you to go against the law, right? You're telling me it's built into the legal system. That's not exactly the way the Rambam formulates it. The Rambam says no. What a Navi can't do is tell you that the law, meaning the pristine theoretical law, has changed. If he tells you that, he's contradicting Nevuas Moshe Rabbeinu. But if he tells you that God right now wants you to act against the law in the books, you listen to him. Why? Because he's not challenging the eternity of the theoretical law. He's only challenging the relevance of the current application for extenuating circumstances in the moment.
Right.
Yes, Eli's right that would grant him the authority to do that is the Pasuk. But that wasn't my question. My question was theologically, why does the Rambam think that the God granting that power is not contradictory? And the answer is because the Rambam thinks that there's a difference between declaring something about the nature of the law and telling someone they're allowed to violate the law, but the law exists, but you're allowed to override it. Now, even though it sounds like semantics, right? The Rambam is telling you, no, that's exactly the point. Right? For someone to come and claim the law is not eternal is heresy. For him to say the law is eternal, but we're allowed to override it, meaning we're allowed to go against the law, is legal. Right? It's against the law. But this is the key. You have to recognize it's against the law.
In order for it to be in line with the law.
Correct. Right? Dafka, what makes it legitimate is the recognition against it's against the law. Were you to try to play a semantic game and say, no, it's legal, right?
It's legally against the law.
Yes, but the Rambam is saying you have to say that. You have to say it's legally illegal. You can't just say it's legal. The second you say it's legal, what you're implying is the law, meaning the pristine theoretical world of the noumena, right? Plato's law of halachic noumena up there, right? Not the chair, but the theory of the chair, right? Right. If you start playing with the theory of the chair, you're a shagetz, right? Right. Don't play with the theory of the chair. You play with the chair, right? You could have a three-legged chair on Earth, but don't tell me there's a three-legged chair in the chairs of the noumena, right? Rachman al litzlan, if you have any idea what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
Hope you know what I'm talking about, right? Good. Now, if you come back to the philosophy we laid out... Now, okay, by the way, so if you come back to what we said last week, what I think the Rambam's philosophy is, right, this fits in. Right? Remember the Rambam's philosophy? Torah is... Remember how he framed it philosophically?
Good for the general.
Torah is only good for the general. Most times in most places, because Torah is not medicine, it's science. It's law of science, law of nature. And laws are eternal, even, right? But then he said, Akira Dabraman HaTorah is? What he said, Akira Dabraman HaTorah is?
Svara.
Is like a doctor amputating a limb. And we said, now if you come back to this Rambam, what is the Rambam saying? The justification of Akira Dabraman HaTorah is what? Is that the law hasn't changed. The law is eternal. Right? The theoretical law, the noumena, are laws of nature.
Right.
They're unchanging. But the application sometimes looks like medicine because you can override it.
Yeah.
Right? Now if you come back to Maritzchios, Maritzchios makes a lot of sense. Because Maritzchios says maybe what's critical to make Akira's Dabraman HaTorah isn't temporary. What is it? It's Tzorech Hashah. As long as I can explain to you why right now it's necessary, that situation could go on for 5,000 years. Because for the Rambam, the issue isn't a week or a millennium. The issue is, how do you frame it? Do you frame it as the law has changed, meaning at its core? Or do you frame it as the application of the law must not reflect the theoretical ideal because of current extenuating circumstances? As long as you frame it that way, theoretically... Right? Theoretically, it's not changing the pristine nature of Torah, and therefore it might be mutter.
Yeah.
Right? Now again, like I said, why is this important? And I'll, right? To bring it back. Why do I think this is important in methodology of Psak? Right? You're not usually encountering Kir's Dabraman HaTorah in Psak. The reason is because I think the philosophy is very important. What's it saying? And again, this is what I said about Psik HaLacha B'Shalat Chak. In order for any of this to be legitimate, you need to recognize fundamentally the integrity of the system. That fundamentally the Torah is eternal and is binding whether it's good for you or not. Right? That's what is at the core. If you recognize that, then lif'amim, under very specific circumstances, the Torah allows you, in very radical circumstances, to override it. In less radical circumstances, to paskin in less plausible ways. Right? But it only works if you approach it, kivyachol, right, the way the Rambam presents the Navi. Right? If you imagine what you're doing is reacting to a circumstance but not playing with the law itself, then it's legitimate. The second you allow the mitigating circumstances to force you to play with the system as a system, not application, right? But it forces you to start playing with the law. And again, this is where some people get annoyed at non-Orthodox movements, is in pursuit of some goal that might be legitimate, instead of invoking circumstances, what they do sometimes, right, is they speciously offer arguments that change what the law is, right? They say that's not the law bichlal, definitionally.
Right?
That's when it becomes illegitimate. Right? That's the framework, psychologically, religiously, theologically, you need to have, even when you approach those extenuating circumstances. Now, the last thing I'll say is that all of this, kamuvan, is, and this should be obvious, dangerous she'ein kamoto. Right? The very fact that halacha has this power is dangerous. Kal vachomer, because who gets to decide when the power can be invoked? The people who would then invoke it.
Right?
Right? Meaning, right, there's no check on this power. Right? Once you have a kirtav min haTorah, the only check is the integrity of the posek to say, I am or I am not able to invoke this.
Not the posek, the
Sanhedrin. Whatever, it doesn't matter. My point is, right, the Sanhedrin, there's no check, because they have to check themselves. Right? And Psikat Halacha... What?
72 checks.
Fine. But Psikat Halacha v'Sharat Chak function the same way. Right? It's very hard to put a check on it. Right? Because the person... Because what are you going to say? I don't think that's extenuating circumstance. The posek will say, well, I think it is. Mm-hmm. And that's what justifies my psak. Buy it or don't buy it.
Right.
So if I tell you... And this may not be satisfying for you, Ellie. Right? This may not be satisfying. But if I tell you, okay, it's dangerous. And it's very hard to impose a check from the outside. Good. So what is the only check? What is the single only check that will ensure that people will, that Sanhedrin will only invoke Akir's Darum HaTorah when it's legitimate? Or in Psikah Halacha v'Sharat Chak, which again is on the same trajectory, is on the same spectrum, even if not nearly as radical. What is the only check that ensures that it is done with Yerush Hamayim? No, Yerush Hamayim. Yerush Hamayim.
Yerush Hamayim. And the other guy's doing this.
So look at the Rambam. This is the very end. Look at the last source.
No, and the other posek.
The Rambam says, "Kol elu advarim lefi mashira dain shezeroi lakach hashasha tzricha." All these things can be done whenever the judge thinks necessary. Uvechal, and then he gives you a warning, right? The Rambam doesn't always do this, but sometimes he needs to. Uvechal you meister of l'shem shamayim, and whatever you do, do it for God. Va'al yekavod abrios kal be'inav shari dochas los asay shel divrayim v'kol shekain kavod b'nei Avram Yitzchak v'Yaakov. I know you hate this, but he says, and don't let kavod abrios, especially kavod of Jews, be light in your hands. Hamachzikim b'torah zemes, who hold on to the Torah, she is zarsh lo haris klo dem, don't destroy their honor. Elohosiv v'kavod amakom, add to the honor of God. Bilvad shekol mavazes a Torah gufo mechol abrios, and anyone who violates the Torah, his body will be, will be chulin. V'machab is a Torah gufo mechubar abrios, and if you honor the Torah, you'll be honored. V'en kavod a Torah lasso pichukeh mishpateh. Why does the Rambam feel necessary to bring this whole Musar Shmuz in the middle of the of it? And the Shulchan Aruch, by the way, does the same thing. He does the exact same thing. Because in the end of the day, Akira's Davram and HaTorah, like I said, the only thing that prevents a Sanhedrin from misusing it is their own integrity. Right? In a Chanami, there are 72 members of the Sanhedrin. Fine, they'll protect itself. But their checks don't come from... There's no checks and balances from an outside system. Right? The check is their Yerush Hamayim, their integrity. Right? And again, the reason I think... And like I said, Psikat HaLacha B'Sharat Chak is on the spectrum of Akira's Davram and HaTorah, whether you like it or not. It's not as radical, bichlal, right? It's not breaking the law. It's not overriding the law. It's just relying on minority positions that are less plausible. But it's still, as you recognize, at some level it's uncomfortable. That's not what pristine law looks like. But it's part of the system, but it's an easily misused part of the system. But the only thing that protects the system is the integrity of the poskim. Right, and that's why, and Rosenzweig likes talking about this a lot. There's a reason why halacha, especially, is obsessed more than maybe any other legal system in the world, not just with the content of the law, but with the quality and integrity of the Bali Mesorah. Right? There's a reason there are all these halachic categories of machish magideha. Right? People who challenge the balei mesora. Right? Because the nature of halacha is so dangerous at some level. Right? It's so subject to integrity. Right? That we invest a lot of power and a lot of faith in those who uphold the system. And we give them power which is somewhat dangerous, even to play with the system. And our only check is that we trust them. Right? The only check of the average person is that we trust the authorities. Right? We trust them to act with integrity. If you don't, right, the system collapses. Right? The system cannot function without trust. Right? Without the leaders having integrity and without the people following them believing that they have integrity. Right?
Right.
And again, so, you know, coming back to Mati's point, how do we get to this, right, in a series on what is halacha, right? The first few weeks, what we did was, how does halacha function under normal circumstances? Okay. Previous authorities, minhag, you know, precedent, you know, sorry, independent analysis, blah, 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 right? That's how halacha works 90% of the time. But the fact is, there's more to halacha than that. Halacha isn't always that neat, isn't always that pristine, right? That may be disturbing, but it's part of the system. And that's why you have to realize that within halacha, so much of psak comes down to, do you trust the people who are in charge of the system to protect it with integrity, right? To adjudicate with integrity, okay? And that's very hard for people to swallow if you're used to thinking of halacha in very, very formal terms. Right, because saying, well, the only check on this is, are people going to be good people, right? Are people going to do it with honesty, right? That's a hard thing to swallow, because that's what Rambam says, right? Right, the only thing that there's a check on is, do they have Yir Shamayim, and do they have kavod of the Jewish people? Right, do they have kavod for the people who are going to keep the halacha, and for the one who issued the law, right? Okay. Next week we'll do one more sugya that discusses the extent to which we can push the Torah for social reasons, right? And then I think maybe we'll start doing tshuvot and see, maybe we'll just skip to that, see a few tshuvot and see how poskim actually implement these types of things. And then what I'd like to do, like I said, towards the end of the year, maybe give ourselves 2 months for this or so, is to take a topic in halacha, I don't care what it is, we'll come up with something.
Right, tshuvot on them.
Correct. And pose a halakhic question and then see, right? I want you to find yourself. I want you to see, like, when you actually try to make a decision, where are you going to find yourself? Right? Are you, and you'll, what you'll find is that I found when I did this experiment the first time with the clapper, was that where I thought I'd find myself is not necessarily where I found myself, right? When I imagined myself as a posek, suddenly the types of decisions I was willing to make were not the same necessarily as what I thought I would when I was just a, pristine Ramdan. And, Okay? Good.